You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
Well, let's go ahead and get started bright and early. Hopefully I get you guys fresh. The one I had yesterday was 4:30, and you could tell people had been here all day. So let's open with prayer, and we'll jump in. Father in heaven, it's good. You are a good, good Father. It's good that we are here to sort of collaborate on how we can more effectively and fruitfully spread the hope of biblical counseling to our churches and our communities, Lord. Pray that you would use what you have taught me and our church to help these brothers and sisters, particularly not only what we've done well, but what we could have done better. And I pray everyone would leave here better equipped and encouraged to take the hill, so to speak, for biblical counseling in their communities. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Well, like I said, my name is Tony Anderson. I have the privilege of serving the Lord as an elder and also on staff as the pastor of counseling, executive pastor at Christian Family Chapel in Jacksonville, Florida. No, it is not Heath Lambert's church. It's the other one. I like to tell Heath we were certified first, so not that we're competitive at all. But I wanted to start with just a little brief history of the Hope Center, sort of give you a big view of where we came from. I've been at the chapel since 2001, and for the first 5 years or so, we had a true co-pastor relationship. They shared the pulpit, and one of the pastors did the counseling. He was the counselor, didn't have any lay support. He is a dear brother, dear friend of mine. He left, went off staff in about 05 to go into full-time missions. I want to say the next part very carefully and respectfully, because it impacted how we went in the process. But that pastor, by his own admission, was an integrationist. That was his counseling model. And so when he stepped off, the elders then wanted to consider, well, how are we going to counsel our people? They had recognized that before, even when this gentleman was on staff, when he would go to Russia or whatever, there was no one there to counsel them. So they really wanted a lay-driven ministry. And so about eight of us went to Faith Lafayette in the February of 2006, just to sort of explore. We went for different reasons. My wife had been exposed to NANC before, and she wanted me to take her for her Valentine's Day present. I said, fine, we'll go. And as we went there and I saw the word opened up for practical application for the first time, I went, wow, this is amazing. I think we can do this, but I didn't think we needed certification. I got the train, we can sit. And then we started doing counseling. I go, I can't do this. I need more training. But anyway, I just want to say that through that, Lisa had Randy Patton as a supervisor. I had Randy Patton as a supervisor. Randy got to know us and said, you know, I think we'd like to come, NANC would like to come do some of their, what they called on the road training then. So in this 08, 9, 10, and 11, NANC brought their training to our church and the community. Through that process, several of us were getting certified. And when Randy left in 11, he challenged us. We want you guys to be a training center. We sort of laughed, said, yeah, right. But in 2014, we became a training center. We've been offering training in Jacksonville since 2014. We've averaged about 100 people a year in our classes. And we've also now take our show on the road, so to speak. We've traveled to Tallahassee and Atlanta and Houston to provide training to other churches and parachurch ministries as well. And through that process, from not even really knowing what biblical counseling was, we've had a training center. We now have 24 certified counselors, five that are in supervision under a fellow, and one who just submitted exams and has their rewrites to work on this week. So we have about 30 people who are now counseling for the Hope Center. And so we've learned some things along the way. I want to share those with you. It is a way. It is not the only way. And it doesn't mean the Lord will work the same way in your church and community. But I just want you to know the Lord can do amazing things when we just walk by faith. So show of hands, how many people, let's see, how do I ask this question? Well, how many people are here because they want to think about starting a counseling ministry in their local church? Okay. How many have a counseling ministry and you're thinking about trying to go to become a training center? Okay, great. How many of you are the only flag waver for biblical counseling in your church? Yeah, well, we're going to pray for you guys, okay? Really, but well, that's a great banner to carry. One of the things as we go through this, what I want you to do is enjoy the journey while focusing on the goal. And what I mean by that is the Lord's sovereign. We don't know in your church what he's going to do, what he will accomplish, but let each step celebrate that. If you are the only one who has now become qualified to help people through biblical counseling, praise the Lord. That's one person that wasn't there before. And really, it's all the Lord's work anyway. If you become, you have a small team, praise the Lord. If you become a counseling center, but not a training center, praise the Lord. Just each step is a way that we can celebrate and praise the Lord. So have a goal, but enjoy the process. Because sometimes if you don't enjoy the process, you get frustrated and can become discouraged. So I want to encourage you in that. Well, how do you start a counseling ministry? You're one of those. You're the only one there. Pray, 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 and then pray some more. As it says here, unless the Lord builds a house, you labor in vain. So you want to continue to pray that the Lord will raise up the people and open the doors that you need. And so the first thing I would suggest that you do is you select a core seed team. Maybe you're it, but if you can get 3 to 4 people who share the vision with you to share that load, I think that would be very helpful. Maybe 3 or 4 people. When we went to Faith back in 06, it was my wife and I, because she had been, her personal testimony, she's a rape survivor. She'd been helped through biblical counseling. And so we were exposed that way. I was an elder in training. I wasn't an elder yet. One of the other couples that went was the elder who had sort of inherited the role of that soul care when the other pastor left. And he was going, what do I do? And so it was us and a couple of other lay people who went up there to explore. And so we sort of caught the vision and shared it together. So that 3 or 4 is a good team. It's, you can continue to encourage one another. I think there is a benefit if you can have a pastor or elder on the team in that seed team, because first of all, it allows for peer-to-peer discussions. I've been on staff now for about 7 years. How many of you are pastors on staff? How many times a week do you get an email or someone saying, this is what the church should do? Okay. Honestly, how many of you delete those emails or whatever without even reading them? Seriously, you do. And so if you can have a fellow pastor who is in the office with some of the other decision makers and say, hey, I want to talk to you about this biblical counseling and what it can do for us. Having a pastor or an elder as part of your team can be hugely helpful. If you don't have that blessing, then you just pray the Lord gives you other opportunities. It also helps with top-down leadership. Our elders said, we want this to be lay-driven. And so the work of pastors is to equip the body for the work of the ministry. And so the pastor who shares that vision can say, look, it's not all on me to do the counseling. I want to raise up people to use their spiritual gifts in the body. So having that pastor or elder as part of the team can be very helpful. Then you want to train your seed team, so to speak. I love these annual conferences. I think they're great. But as you're trying to start a counseling ministry, you got to get some fundamentals. You got to get that classroom work that satisfies certification done. So look for opportunities, ways to train that seed team. Initially, if it's only 3 to 4 people, it's probably cheaper for you guys to travel. Go somewhere like Faith Lafayette where you can get that 30 hours within 1 week. Or maybe look for regional conferences that provides way for you to get training. But get that fundamentals that will qualify for that phase 1 certification. You get great workshops and plenary speakers here, but it doesn't count toward your certification. So you want to train them in fundamentals and then encourage them to continue to read. I would just go to your ACBC approved reading list. If you're not familiar with the certification process, you have to have 1,000 pages of reading from their approved list. If you're going to read, make it count. So just go there and start reading so that they're continuing to learn. watch the observation videos that are out there so they can start to see what counseling looks like. Faith Lafayette has good ones. IBCD has some good ones. And then finally, start counseling. As Randy Patton told us, as you start to counsel, if you stick to the word, you're not going to hurt them. You might not be as effective as you eventually will be, but you won't hurt them if you stick with the word. And so we started counseling. Now, after we got certified, our elders took the position that all of our counselors have to be certified or under supervision to counsel. Their thinking was, we're going to put people behind closed doors to discuss the problems of life, and we want to make sure that our people are getting the best help we can. So we now require certification to counsel at our ministry. Other churches differ. That can be a policy decision you can make, but that's the decision that we had. So now that you're training your seed team, you want to seek senior leadership buy-in and support. And so I think it's very important to make it part of your strategic planning. We live in an area of Jacksonville. It's probably a middle-class neighborhood. Probably over the last 10 years, it's transitioned a little. But as our pastor pointed out, there are already social services in our community for the food closets, for clothing, things of that nature. But there wasn't anything to help with the biggest problems of life, their broken relationships. So we saw the counseling ministry as a way really to impact our community. And so that's sort of the vision we took to our elder team was, yes, counseling is helping individuals with problems of life, but it's a way that we can really impact our community. And also to disciple our own. We were a Bible teaching church, verse by verse, and it was just very consistent with the discipleship being taught from the pulpit. So we said we wanted to disciple our own people. And one thing that I think that is lost when we talk about counseling ministry is the great impact it has on personal evangelism. What we experienced was people have problems, their marriages are difficult, problems with their teenagers. And so until they've learned to use the scriptures, yes, they profess faith in Christ, but it doesn't seem like their faith is making a difference in their life. And then when all of a sudden they see the Christ in the pages of scripture and the Bible helps them with real problems, they're excited about that. So when they go to work or they're in their neighborhoods, they are with enthusiasm talking about their faith. Or maybe they're not yet equipped to really share the gospel, but what they'll do is they'll boldly say at the workplace, you have troubles with your marriage? You need to go to my church. They gave us great counsel when we were in despair. So this counseling ministry actually is a boost to the evangelism in the church. I would also encourage you to have your pastors or elders listen to audios of training, particularly anything that might be controversial. Like I said, our particular situation before, there was an integrationist model. And so as we went toward a biblical counseling model, some who were not that clear on the distinctions were worried, well, if we move to biblical counseling, are we speaking ill of our former pastor? Or we've heard caricatures of biblical counseling. So what we did was, and I appreciate our elders, we got all the DVDs from NANC training on counseling those with depression, medical illnesses, things of that nature. The elders listened to it and came back and said, this is consistent with what they would hear on Sunday morning from the pulpit. So they were equipped. They took that mystery away. They were willing to listen and say, yes, we can. This is training that we can endorse. Next thing is to consider your legal and insurance issues. Now, I practiced law for 28 years. I was a commercial real estate lawyer. And so I came on staff in 2013 to sort of help start the training center portion. And it's been great. People ask me, do you miss being a lawyer? And I say only twice a month. But what you want to think about is you hear a lot of people don't want to counsel or because they're worried about liability. So some of the issues you have to consider, do we do our counseling as a separate entity or as part of the church? My personal view is we still do it as part of the church. And I'll tell you why. First of all, as the laws try to erode our privileges, I think the churches are the last bastions. The parachurch ministries, Christian schools, things of that nature, I think their rights will be eroded first. I think the churches can still teach their views, teach the scriptures. So we counsel as just part of the church. The Hope Center is just sort of the name of our ministry. It's not a separate entity. There's another reality when you think about liability. You have more. How many of you have youth ministries in your church? Far greater source of liability. Have you seen what they do on retreats? Put about 15 kids in a 12-person van. You got a lot more liability in your youth ministry. Now, you may consider, and we've done this before, is the assets, the land and the buildings are owned by a holding company, and then all the church ministries are done through the 501c3. Check with your insurance. We have found in Florida, at least our insurance companies, all of our counselors, because they're certified and we state counsel under the authority of the elders, they are covered under the pastoral counseling provisions of our liability insurance. They're covered. And they also, our agent says, really the liability for counseling is not so much, you know, you sadly have someone who commits suicide. It's when you have inappropriate relationships in counseling. That's the biggest concern. So we've put safeguards at our church. Men counsel men, women counsel women. A man may counsel a couple, but ideally it'll be couples counseling couples. So we don't have men counseling women or things like that. You should become very familiar with your state's duty to report those statutes, particularly reporting crimes against minors. Sometimes you think you'll hear something that happened 5 years ago, but if they're still minors and it happened while they're a minor, all of a sudden it's like, oh, we got a duty to report that. And you have to walk those people through, because they may have come to counseling not realizing that they told you that you now have to report it. And so you have to become very familiar with those statutes as well. And then develop some good forms. Exhibit one is our consent to counsel. You're welcome to plagiarize that as much as you want. Obviously, that's what we did as well. We built from other good forms. We spell out the confidentiality that we are allowed to maintain. Basically, we want to keep it as confidential as the Bible permits us to keep it confidential. And we have a provision in there as well that you might want to consider, that we state that if you are a member of our church, then I know and our teaching pastor can know as well that you're in counseling. They don't have to know why. And the reason we do that is if you're in a staff who's recruiting leaders, sometimes they'll extend an invitation to, hey, would you be a small group leader in the youth group? And they bring those names to our staff. And that way the pastor and I know, and we can go and say, you know what, it's not the season of life for that gentleman to be leading someone in youth right now. And the fact that we have a counseling ministry typically doesn't involve a lot of questions. You know, the youth pastor say, okay, I get it, I understand, I'm not going to push for details. But sometimes if you don't know that, next thing you know, someone's in leadership, you know, there's a situation that sort of says it's not the best time. You have to have that awkward conversation saying, I need you to step aside while you're in counseling. We have a personal data inventory. Does anybody here use Church Community Builder as their forms or anything? You've heard about that, or Fellowship One. A lot of these softwares can do forms for you. And so Exhibit 2, which is our PDI, I apologize for the length of that document, but when you use CCB and print the form, it has huge amounts of spacing. So that's why it's not really that long a form, but you get an idea of the questions that we ask in our personal data inventory. We also require case reports. I had a question ahead of time. If you're pursuing certification, ACBC has a form of case report you have to use. It's a Word document. What we use is that form, but we've converted it to an Excel document. How many of you have used the ACBC case report forms? Okay. Our concern with that is, depending on how the fellow likes it, they get very long. And so you're scrolling and scrolling. If you put it on Excel, each tab can be a question, background information, problems and solutions, you know, thing, and you just click the tab and all of a sudden it's all organized for you. So that might be something you want to consider. And if you email me, I'm happy to send you the template for that for your own use. And if you're blessed to have attorneys in your ministry that will be able to assist you, it's great to be able to place a phone call without getting a bill. So, and I know I was one of those. So, but even if you have to incur some costs, it's very worthwhile to have someone that you can pick up the phone and get legal counsel. Also, as you get started, you want to consider your budget and facilities, like counseling rooms. Where are you going to counsel? You're going to give them a dedicated space, or are you going to use some classroom spaces? And you want to make sure you have an appropriate level of privacy. We were blessed. We bought basically a Class B shopping strip center that's right next to our campus, and one of the buildings was a former real estate office. It was easily to subdivide for counseling rooms. But the doors were glass doors, so we went in and put some of that tinting up to about shoulder level. So you can see that people are in there, and you need to, you can stand up and look in there, but it's that appropriate level of privacy in there. You see doors like this, some of our, you know, where you have the door where you can look in there. You want to make sure that there's, you want to protect both your counselors and your counselees. We try to make sure there are whiteboards in every room. We use tables. Now, if you look at the observation videos, you got the people who like to sit in their living rooms with their Bibles in their laps. I can't do that. I need a lot of room. Even this is sort of, I feel cramped up here. So we put tables in every room so people can put their Bibles. Then I think you want to ask, are you going to let people counsel in their homes or not? That's just something that we've wrestled with recently, because when we first started, we didn't have that building. So a lot of people were counseling in their home. Henry? We do not. The question, do we have video and audio in the room? We do not. We do not. My wife counsels ladies in the home frequently, but, you know, we've realized, you know, if you have people that, you know, have been incarcerated or they're out, you know, you worry about the safety of your counselors. But also now with allegations, you know, even same-sex allegations and things, you know, it's like there may be wisdom in bringing them all on campus. So you notice that's up to you guys and your elder team. I'm not suggesting what you do, just something to be mindful of. We have a resource area room where, you know, the pamphlets, everything they have for homework that is stored. This is something we learned. It depends on your church culture. For a while, those were just in an area of the counseling center, but we soon realized people say, oh, this is a nice free resource, and they were walking away. So we put a lock on there that we can keep up with those resources. You should factor in your startup resources as well. We go ahead and print homework sheets that people can use. That's Exhibit 3. I got that from Brad Bigney. Because we notice when we're watching the observation videos sometimes, did anybody ever watch Randy's with Trey and Deb? How long did it take them to write up that homework? It's like, so the pre-printed form helps you get your homework written out a little faster. It's determine what type of booklets and books you want to have to begin with. What are your basics? Counseling ministry does not have to be a big drain on your budget. You have to have some seed money. But once it's established, and if you have your people, we don't charge for our counseling, but we ask them to pay for the resources if they can, then they pay to replenish. So you got to have some seed money, but to actually maintain the resources, it doesn't take a whole lot of money. We use Square. If you don't know what Square is, a lot of times when you go have sort of the white iPad where you check out at places now. Square will manage your inventory, and so we load our inventory and you have it on your phone, and you get swipe cards there. And so when someone comes in, we, you know, sell them Christ and Your Problems for $3. We just swipe it or enter it there, and it keeps up with our inventory. And we have a person who, as part of her volunteer job, anytime we get to a minimum inventory of a resource, she'll order them. So it's a way to, it's a, the other thing about counseling ministry, it's a way for people to serve who aren't counseling. There are a lot of ways they can support the ministry. You know, their passion may be to help people, but their gifting may not be counseling. So they can use their gifting in the counseling ministry. You're getting ahead of me. So next, supervision. You got to figure out supervision fees, annual dues, conference registrations. How are you going to pay for those things? We take the approach of your counseling for our church. We're going to try to pay most of your costs to be certified. One, we're the ones who decided. And two, most people don't have to pay to serve. And so we try to handle that. Now, some of our counselors say, you know, I'll pay my own fees as part of my giving, so to speak. And that's always a blessing when they can do that. But, your application for ACBC is $100. Your annual dues, as we just voted, went to $115. Supervision fees are $650 plus the books. So, you know, just to get certified, you're around $1,000 there. So if the church can absorb that, I think it is a great blessing and will overcome some stumbling blocks. And then we also provide some books for our counselors. I try to find out what is something that is a good book, and we'll read it together. I'll buy it for them. I say the budget. And then where are you going to get some dedicated funds? Well, the first thing is cancellation deposits. We do collect, and we got this from Faith, a $25 cancellation deposit. They say if you go through counseling and you don't have any last minute cancellation, you get it back. But if you have a late minute cancellation, 24, 48 hours with no notice or no good reason, we keep that deposit and you have to put another one up before you can re-engage in counseling. So that $25, they can add up. And a lot of times the good news is when people graduate, they'll just say, yeah, you keep it. Thanks. That's been a great gift. So they just let us keep that deposit as well. So you're right. We do want to let them have a little skin in the game, so to speak. We have a chart of accounts and as part of our budget called a counseling fund. And so people, if they're online giving or whatever, they can give specifically as a designated gift to the counseling ministry. We've had some very generous people help with that. And some of the most generous people are ones from other churches because they're coming to us. They realize their church hasn't offered that. And so as a thanks to us, they'll give a gift to our counseling ministry. And then we also use registration fees from our training to help fund some of these costs. Because now that we have 30 counselors now, think about it, that's 30 times 115. That's their annual dues. I have 6 under supervision right now. So that's, you know, about $4,000 of supervision fees. And so once the training center came along, that's helped defray some expenses as well. Because we try to, I'll get to this in a minute. Our foundations is 40 hours, not 30. As we started on our council, started training, we said, you know what, we had the 30 hours a minimum, but there are some other things we wished we had known. So ours is 40 hours of training, but we still try to price it comparable to what some of the 30-hour classes are. So you've got those mechanics, and you now want to try. Yes, sir. Oh, okay. Thank you. You come away from these trainings, you have great diagrams or things. And so what we did, we opened up a Dropbox account. Everyone, once they start counseling, they get a link to the Dropbox and they're organized by topic. So everyone, we start sharing our own, our diagrams. Some of our counselors develop sort of their own little short Bible stories for topics and they put them in there. So it's in Dropbox. And then we've created sort of our own Vimeo showcase. We take some of the training that we've done in our training, put them in that shared notebook so that our counselors can then assign them as homework if there's a topic that they want to use for their counselees. Thanks. Thank you for that. So then we start rolling out to the body. You've got all this, you know, and I hope your eyes didn't glaze over. I know a lot of you came for practical how to counsel, but as you start thinking about your counseling ministry, you get wrestled with these questions. You now want to take it to the body because, you know, you're fired up about it, but the body says biblical counseling. Yeah, that's okay. But, you know, We also have Awanas and all these other ministries. How are we going to sort of build excitement for the counseling ministry? And so what we did is we rolled it out to our deacons and sort of our senior ministry leaders first. And the way we did that was at our meetings, we borrowed a concept from, again, from Brad called the what ifs. What Brad did with his leadership team and what we now do is we would craft a hypothetical situation and say, what if, and then there's an example in your notes, exhibit 4. What if after a small group meeting or what you encounter a difficult situation, how would you respond? And we give them 5 minutes to craft their answer, and they must use at least one passage of scripture to support their answer. In other words, they can't wing it. And we did this for once a month for a while to start realizing, help them realize, you know, I really could grow in knowing how to use my Bible to help someone with a real problem. And then we would say, that's what biblical counseling is, training you, as they say, to help real people with real problems using the scriptures. We used it with our deacons and some of our senior leaders. You know, if they were our family group leaders, which we try to really put some shepherding on them. So you know, those are the people we expose to the what ifs. And then sort of casting the vision. Now, I know from talking to you, some of you have, I'll take that back. Some of you have friends who have senior pastors who maybe aren't on board totally. If you can have, though, your teaching pastor from the pulpits say, this is a ministry we're launching and we're behind this and why, it's going to go a lot, whole lot better. If you have to sort of publicize that counseling ministry just through maybe the multiple email communications and things that are in line with all the other ministries, that'll be a little bit more of a challenge. So if you can get your senior pastor on board and get some minutes in the main service, I think that will be huge. So pray for that. Pray for that. Pray that he would be willing to give you those minutes. And then as you're casting the vision, we go back to you want to show them evangelism, the needs of the community, the relational brokenness that the community is experiencing. How many of you are in communities that have no relational brokenness? Yeah, exactly. And then also say it's really intense discipleship. So many churches, good churches, they're big on discipleship. And their model is, you know, we're going to have small groups and things of this nature, either same gender or the family groups. What you want to show them is biblical counseling is just that intense discipleship where we got this picture from Faith, a discipleship river, where you take the person that's out of the mainstream river, put them in sort of a little eddy for that intense discipleship to solve the problems, and then you relaunch them back into the regular ministries of the church. So it really is a good picture to say this is consistent with what we're trying to do in our discipleship ministry. I am not hitting my... Oh, I only missed one. So if your teaching pastor can promote it, it helps communicate that it's now a core value, part of the church's DNA. And here's huge. Every objection is a teaching opportunity. As I said, when people had false ideas about what biblical counseling ministry was, this was back when it was, you know, Nank and Newthetic. And so some people really were very concerned that we were going with this model. And you can really, you can sort of react to that and say, well, this is just what we've decided to do. But I learned a lot from our teaching pastor that every objection is a teaching opportunity. Welcome it. Say, let's sit down. Let's talk about it. Tell me what your concern is. Tell me how you came to that conclusion and then address it with reality. And that's not to say some people will object. We probably lost, I would say, 11 to 15 people from the body because they just really could not get on board with biblical counseling, either because they'd had prior training from a seminary or Bible college that took a contrary view, and to them it was just something they couldn't buy into. But I think for the most part, even when they left, we left as reconciled brothers and sisters. So have those conversations. Then you want to start expanding your team. And you can do emails, you can do announcements saying, if you're interested in this, come to this meeting, but do the one-on-one ask. That's what we found. identify people that you think have a heart, maybe a gifting for this. Randy Patton has said, look for people that you recognize that other people go to for wisdom already. And then go to them and say, would you consider pursuing biblical counseling as a ministry? Take them to coffee. Have breakfast with them. Because a lot, when you think about it, we go back to how many opportunities do you hear in a church about this is a way to serve? And you just sort of say, well, yeah, I'll think about it. But if someone says, will you serve in this ministry? You start thinking about it. I prayed about having this meeting with you. I brought your name before our staff and elders, and they thought you would be a good person to do. And now I'm asking you to prayerfully consider. I've yet to have someone say, I won't even pray about it. You know, you've got people praying over these decisions, and it is a way to elevate or to raise up people. And then this was a huge one. Release your leaders. Most people who would be good biblical counselors are already busy. And so they may think, how can I add this on? And can we as a church staff just say, we're not asking you to do an add-on. We're going to release you from your current role. And we'll raise up other people in that role, but we want you to pursue this. Now, some people, they have such joy, and they think they're getting fruit and affirmation in their ministry, and that's good. It's like, look, and I remember our pastor told me this when he asked me to take over the counseling ministry. I was teaching adult fellowships. I enjoyed it. And he said, well, for very few people are willing and have sort of that passion for counseling. We can find other teachers. They may not be as good as you, but then he said, or they may be better than you. Well, okay, that's encouraging. But it's that reality that when we release people to do something else, it creates doors for other people who aren't serving to get to serve. If we keep going to the same people and asking them to add on something, they get burned out and you're not opening the doors for others. So be willing to release your leaders. That has to come from the top, because what's the youth pastor going to do when you've taken one of his key volunteers now to go be in the biblical counseling ministry? So you have to make sure that your senior leadership is selling this across the board. And then show them what it looks like as you're now recruiting new people to your seed team. You've trained your seed team. Now you want people to join you. Show them what it looks like. Let them watch observations. Let them sit in on live observations. Invest in them financially if you can. Help pay for some of their training and their resources. If they're getting ready to do exams, do some study groups. Talk about this a little bit. How many of you would say have experienced that the exams were the biggest hurdle to certification? Yes. People said, I haven't written an exam in 20 years. Okay. But if you can do study groups, and what we've now done, an exam track, if I have time, I'll flesh that out, where we try to take the mystery out of it. Because think about it. They need to write 24 theology questions. And it's on the Trinity and the doctrine of the church and the doctrine of man. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. But then you realize, they only want a page and a half. So you're not writing it to your seminary professor. You're writing it so the person across the table from you would understand it. And so we try to help them realize you're making it too bigger than it needs to be. So those study groups can help. Now, from a staffing standpoint, this is probably more your preferred future rather than right away. But a counseling pastor and director, I would think, would be critical. That person, that's the role I play. You establish policy. We've written a policy manual. But I have found that one of my most important roles is actually shepherding the team. Once we have the team, you need to pray for them. It is a very difficult ministry, and because of confidentiality, they usually do it alone. And many times when people won't change, they may slander them, and they can't really defend themselves. And so they need shepherding, they need encouraging, and you find ways either to do it one-on-one or to bring your team together. Be their pastor. Be the pastor of your team, because it is a very hard ministry. And you also want to make sure there's no mission drift. As you start getting 25, 30 people, they start picking up things, they start reading things, And it's like, you know, I'm not sure that's consistent with what we teach and believe. So you have to be that person that sort of says, you know, let's not use that resource, or let's not use that in our ministry. That's a critical role. And then one of the things I do is I report to the elders on basically the ministry as a whole. One of the things they're looking for is, how long do our people have to wait? And then what are the common issues they're presenting? Because that then helps them know how to shepherd the flock. We have a counseling administrator as well. Her role, and God bless her, what a hard job. She is my intake and waiting list coordinator. She takes all the PDI, she puts them on the wait list. We've established a policy. We have priorities. If you're a member or attender of CFC, you get first priority. If you are unchurched, you have a sort of the second priority. And then if you are a member or attender of another church, you're sort of in that third priority. The theory being, they have shepherds that should be shepherding them. We're going to shepherd our own, then shepherd those without a shepherd, and then we will assist other shepherds if there is availability for that. But her job is to sort of manage that, to assign cases. She has to field the cold calls and say, we love to help you. Unfortunately, there's a wait list. What a hard job, right? I'm so grateful for Kim, my assistant. And then depending on how large your team is, when we first got started, she also had the role of assisting with resources. But we've been able now to have sort of an inventory manager. This is where you can use people who have admin gifts. This woman is she works in a real estate office, but she manages Square for us. She looks at the inventory, and we've set minimums. Like if we get down to, I think, 10, you can trust God, or 10 Christ in your problem, she's placing an order. And so that's why it's important for our people to log their sales through Square, because once a week, Susan can look at those and get them ordered. And she can tell me what's selling, what's not being used. Because now you're in a stewardship thing. I don't want to have a lot of inventory that our counselors aren't using. And then we also, as new people come along, we assign them a coach or a mentor, which is a person of the same gender who's in our counseling team. So if someone, yes, sir. They are electronic. We want them to fill out electronically. We ask our individuals to keep them for 4 years. But what I've just implemented is when they do a termination report, they have to email me their case report. I want to make sure they're on theirs. They're on theirs. Yeah. And then they send me their case reports when it's over. No, ma'am. They keep a case report on their laptop or whatever. I have an 75-year-old counselor who is using the computer. Yeah. Yes. And we help her. But yes. Yeah. Now, what you could do is take those and say, hey, every 2 or 3 weeks, bring them to me and we'll scan them in. We'll do. Now, we have had to help some of our older counselors with Square and things like that, how to work apps on their phones. They just bring the money to Kim and say, can you log this for me? I don't know. We'll do that. If someone's willing to counsel, I'm going to try to remove the barriers for them. So, yes, ma'am. Through Church Community Builder, CCB, what I've done, I don't want to get lost in the weeds here, okay, but basically I can set up a group just for my counselors. We have a shared calendar, and then the calendars, we have 10 rooms in the Hope Center, and they can reserve the rooms, and we can all look at that calendar and see which rooms are open at the time. Yes, sir. Yeah, we use the ACBC form in an Excel format. But the same base questions they're required to answer. Yeah. All right, let me keep going here. So we give them a mentor. What we like to do is we say, all right, you know, you're going to be under supervision, but here's someone who'll help you with some of the mechanics. Because all the things I've just told you about, even now, if you only heard it once and then you had to implement it, it's hard. Like, how do I get a key to the Hope Center? How do I reserve a room? How do I check out books? So we give them someone to walk them through that process. And it sort of serves as a mentor, particularly during their first year of counseling. Now, this is sort of a transition. A lot of times people are counseling, they really want to be a training center. Let me encourage you, first, make sure you're counseling with excellence. I know when we went through the process, what ACBC wanted to know, they wanted to know a lot about how we were counseling before they approved us as a training center. And I think the reason you don't want to be quick to go from counseling to training center is you want to counsel out of your own experiences. As I was sharing before the class, you don't want to be up there training others basically by just parroting what you heard in your own training. You bring to bear what you've learned in the counseling process. So go ahead and counsel with excellence. As I said, we require certification. Now that we have enough critical mass to at least counsel our own, we require every new person to be certified. And then we have tracking forms and graduation termination forms, which are there for you. When someone starts a case, they fill out a form that tells me when they're counseling. Is it one, are they counseling one-on-one? Is it a couple? Do they have a co-counselor? What's the presenting problem? And also, they also can check, is this a case where they're willing to be observed? Are they willing to co-counsel? And so that data, Kim and I get that data, and we can say, okay, let's try to get a co-counselor for this case. And that data of what is the presenting problem helps, because that is from the perspective of the counselee. What do they see the problem? And what are those common problems? Then when they graduate or counseling is terminated, the counselor fills out another form. And it says, looking back, what were the problems? And usually they're more, because they're more heart issues they've identified because they've been in the counseling room. Also, they sort of assign a grade, graduated, no concerns. Four is a terminated counseling, but really no issues. Sometimes people just say, summer's over, I'm busy. And the counselor's thinking, I would have liked to have done a two or three more sessions, but really no concerns. Three, two, or one, they usually state, this is why I have a concern. And I get that to determine if there's any more follow-up from a shepherding or church discipline standpoint, or contacting their pastor to say, just want you to know, one of your sheep terminated counseling on less than ideal conditions, but I want you to be aware of that. Then market the ministry, for lack of a better term. But I will tell you this, if you are offering help, biblical counseling help, you're not going to have to do a lot of marketing. Word will get around. For the longest time, we had it on our webpage, and we had a sign that said Hope Center on the side of the building, and we had a huge wait list. But we have it on the web page. You have it on our web page. We have it on the ACBC web page. We feature our ministry in church communications, visitor bags, outreach events, the bulletin, welcome videos. If you can get any signage, that's helpful on your church sign. We have a resource center on Sunday that we set up in our community space, where it's, you know, just three tables, nice tablecloths. We have a display banner in the back. And so many of the resources we use in the counseling ministry are available on Sunday. And there's information about the counseling ministry. This is a great way to help get good resources into the hand of your people, and to encourage your people to get those resources in the hands of friends, loved ones, community members. And it's a great place to have good conversations, because people will come and say, I've got a problem with a terminally ill parent or something, and you get a resource and you can have that shepherding conversation, and that starts making people aware of the ministry. Our pastor does a great job in his sermons to reference the counseling center as part of his applications, you know, as a practical application. If you're struggling this, you know, that's why we have the Hope Center. And we try to feature testimonies from counselees in service as well. How am I doing on time here? Okay. And then I think, you know, we've been doing this now for about 12 years. You want to continue to educate. If you've counseled very long, you realize that had you stopped just with your 30 hours and 1,000 pages of reading, you'd have been far behind the curve. There's always a need to keep reading and sharpening. So we have team meetings where we pray for each other, but we try to present something substantive for their training. And then we have self-imposed continuing education requirements. Exhibit 7 is a page out of our manual. We call it investments in excellence. So basically we say, if you invest in your training, and what we ask them to do is there's observation where we ask them to be observed for the first 4 sessions of a case and then observe someone for their first 4 sessions, or co-counsel with someone that you haven't co-counseled with in a year from start to finish. Do one of those. 2, for learning, we want them to listen to at least 6 workshops on counseling material. And then, or if they're developing workshops to teach, that counts as well. And 3, 300 pages of reading from a biblical counseling or worldview book so that they're reading. And we say, if you invest in that, then we will invest in paying your annual dues. And I typically try to pay for at least 1 conference fee for them. It could be the ACBC annual conference or something more regional in town. So we do require that investments in excellence. So now you're counseling. You're doing it well, and do I want to start a training center? First of all is contact ACBC and discuss your plans with them and any concerns either party may have. And I'm not saying there is any, but you don't want to do a whole lot of work to realize ACBC says, well, we have some concerns that may delay that. You don't want to put in a lot of work up front. So contact ACBC and become familiar with their requirements for a training center. I'm so behind. No, I'm not really behind, but self-imposed. Next thing is recruit a project manager to develop and implement your plan for a training center. Now, this is ideal. I had one of my fellow elders had retired, and he sort of took over the project manager, the timeline for everything that we need in order to become a training center. He should share the vision. He has a small project team, and he holds people accountable to do what they said they're going to do. Because if you're in counseling, you're sort of busy, and the people who are going to be part of your training center are in that ministry. So they're adding something on for a while, and you want to hold them accountable for that. And then you want to select your faculty. You have to consider the topics to be covered. ACBC has a template. There are certain hours of different topics you have to offer to be a training center. So you want to go over that, make sure you're covering those. Some of them are medical issues, and you want to determine how are we going to teach the medical issues. I don't know if it's changed, but at the time, you didn't have to be a doctor to teach them, but we recognize that there's some credibility with a doctor standing up, teaching on issues of medications and things of that nature. And so Randy put us in touch with Dr. Lee Edmonds, who's going to be our 6th plenary speaker today. Lee has been our medical teacher since 2014. But there is a growing field of doctors that you might be able to contact. If you can raise up your own, that would be great. If you have a medical doctor in your body who would be willing to be trained, become certified, that would be great. Here's another one. Make sure your faculty should be good counselors and good communicators. Think about it. If you're doing counseling training, the weekend training, there could be 10 workshops in 36 hours. Have you ever sat through one of those where half of them were like, and it's like, you know, shoot me now. So you want people who are good communicators. They have to have sound theology and they've got to be good. But we work with that. If you're familiar with the comedian Ken Davis, he has an organization called Dynamic Communicators Workshops, and where they bring in, they really teach you how to present, how to organize your talks, how to use hand motions so they don't look random, you know, like the robot from Lost in Space. You know, they sort of help your presentation. So I think that's a good idea, and we've done that. Now that's not cheap, so that's sort of preferred future if you can. But usually you can partner with other ministries because they want their Sunday school teachers to be better equipped, staff people who sometimes preach to be better equipped. So you can sort of share that cost. Because that's one, we went away, but you can also bring some of their people to your church to teach that. You want to make sure your final faculty meets ACBC requirements. Check with Sam Stevens on that, but a certain percentage of them have to be ACBC certified, and a certain percentage of them have to be men teachers. So you want to make sure you fit those categories. And then develop your workshops. They have to have sound doctrine. Develop all material with practical applications. The good feedback we have is that it's practical. It's not just theory. So we always ask the people who are presenting, give some considerations. What do you want the counselor to know? We also ask them to include suggested homework and suggested resources and to come at it with, what did I wish I knew that I didn't when I started on this topic? And then if the workshop itself ties to specific ACBC exam questions, we ask them to footnote that. So when people take their notebooks later on and they're doing their exams, they know they can go to a certain workshop for that. And then we require all our presenters to practice before they present. I even have to practice. And there's some good benefits to that. It provides additional training to your team. So you're teaching them. They get the benefit of that. It sharpens the presenter. Because, you know, in my mind, I know what I'm saying. I think it comes across well. But someone says, I'm not following your thought on that. Or I get lost in your notes here. So you can sharpen that. It gets tweaked. But then also the whole team has that sense of we're contributing to this. We're helping this workshop become better. So we have to practice. And sometimes we have to represent if we have to make substantial changes. So it's just that important that there's excellence in what we teach. And then you plan your training course. How are you going to do it? Like I said, we've done 40 hours rather than 30, but you need to pick your format. And it helps. So who's your intended target? Is it your own body? Then when would your body most likely attend? The first 2 or 3 years, we did 2 workshops a week for 20 weeks because we were trying to reach our own body. But we realized that was hard for pastors or leaders from other churches. So we've now gone to the weekend format. Friday night and Saturday, when we are willing to travel, we're willing to do the weekend format or even the 1 week format. No one's taking this up on the 1 week format yet, but we're willing. Decide if you're going to videotape. We use it for makeup purposes because people say, well, I want to take the course, but I can't do 4 weekends. We say, that's okay. If you sign up and register, we'll give you access to a Vimeo showcase where you can watch what you missed. And then you can decide if you're going to make it an online option. We have resisted the online training option just because feedback we got was people learn better in person. And there's already online options. So it's like, you know, I don't know what we're adding to that. But we're getting requests for our material online, so we'll have to reconsider that. How will you disseminate your notes? Hard copy notebooks. Again, most people like those. Particularly the older people who aren't familiar with like Notability or apps. But we've also used Dropbox where all the notes are available in a Dropbox and stored that way as well. The Houston church that had us only provided them through Dropbox. And that's where we got the idea. Real quick, you have to then decide registration and pricing. You know, how is it online registration? Consider your actual costs, including printing. I have some teachers who really like to give a lot of attachments and charts and things, which is great. They're expensive. You know, we've determined that a notebook was like $50 to if you put it in there. So you got to realize, know what your actual costs are. And then do you want to use some of that money to sort of fund further training for your people, factor in your cost of your meals or any honorariums required? And then consider what additional volunteers you need for your actual conference, registration, check-in, snacks, meals, AVL support. I'm so grateful when we go somewhere, this church, man, it's plug and play. And that's great. But when you go and you can't, your video's not working or whatever, so you want to make sure you have sound AVL support. Factor in, is there setup and takedown? And then ways we promote it in the service to our own people. We have targeted emails to groups within our own church. I typically try to contact every local pastor if I've counseled anyone from their church. Basically, in a loving way, I'm trying to say, hey, wouldn't you like to shepherd your own sheep? You know, and here's a way to do that. I contact ACBC counselors in the state or the region, And then you can, if you're doing training, you can get it posted on the ACBC and the Biblical Counseling Coalition webpage as well. And then when you're done, I don't know if this is still the case, but what ACBC did when we did in 2000, is Sam in here? Sam? There, you got provisionally approved. And so we got approved in 2014, but to keep that provisional or to go permanent, two students from your counseling training have to be certified within a period of 2 years. So, you know, I was laser-eyed on two people and go, you are responsible for the future of this ministry. You better get certified. But you follow with your application, and the application is very thorough. They want to know your elder team. They want to know the background on that. They want to know everyone in your counseling ministry, when they were supervised, who they were supervised by, how much counseling you're providing. So they're not looking for just people who give teach content. They approve training centers that are doing excellent counseling. So don't get the cart before the horse there. And then follow up. We've established an exam track that we started the week after our training ended. We had 32 people. Bill Winton, who is one of our, he's presented here before, sort of headed, took that hill to climb. We had 32 people sign up for it. And within 3 months, 16 people had done their exams because we sort of modeled it a little bit after Faith, where we taught, gave them lab time and taught some more with the expectation that they're working on their exams right there. And then those they didn't finish that night, they'd get done before they came back the next week. And that was a huge help. Once again, the women are leading the way. You know, men, it's hard to get men certified. I'll just tell you that. So at least in our experience. And then you need two to be certified within 2 years. So we're out of time. That was a broad brush. I will stay up here if there are any particular questions. My email, I don't know if it's on there. It's Tony A. It's not Tanya. Looks like it, but it's not. I just called Tanya, my assistant. Tony A at cfcjax.com. And we're happy to share resources. We're happy to talk to you any way we can help you out. We'd love to do that because we really do want to see biblical counseling multiplied. Yes, sir. My email, Tony A at, and it's CFC, Christian Family Chapel, cfcjax.com. All right. God bless. Don't keep Nicholas waiting.